Okay, can everyone hear me? How's my volume? Okay, pretty good. Awesome. So I'm very glad to be here today. I'm actually honored to be able to speak in front of you all. So like Leanne said, my name's Aaron. I'm the Community Food Market Coordinator at 10th Church, working with local missions. Many of you might know my wife, Marissa, who's been helping with the youth group. And I'm not a math major, but we've been here since 2020, so that means 4 years, which is just mind-blowing. But okay, so we're in the series, Portraits of God, where we try to discover aspects of God's nature as defined in the Bible. Today is God is light. So here's the verse, John 8:12. When Jesus spoke again to the people, he said, "I am the light of the world. Whoever follows me will never walk in darkness, but will have the light of life." When I was young, my family and I would often take this camper van and go camping all around BC. I really liked the days, but the nights were very uncomfortable. I'm sure anyone else here who's done tent camping or camper van camping might know that it's hard to scramble around for a flashlight. When you go to the bathroom, you're worried about getting attacked by a bear. There's people snoring all around you. But during these nights, there are these moments that I really liked, where we would walk along this path, and this path led to a clearing that you could see once the darkness of the trees separated and led us to the light of the stars. And we would lie down on the dock and look up and stare in wonder at God's creation and have moments of peaceful reflection. It gave me a sense of thankfulness. Back in the day and now, there is a similar kind of ritual that happens. It is during a Jewish holiday called Sukkot. It is also known as the Feast of Tabernacles or the Feast of Booths, where the Jews will go in these booths and look up through the top of it and look up into the stars and reflect God's glory. This also, the idea of booths might also signify the clouds that God used to cover people during that time. So by the way, I know our picnic day has been covered by clouds. Another day we might be able to look at it is this is God's covering for us. So maybe. During the celebration of Sukkot, people would leave their booths and then go to the temple. And in the temple, there were these four giant golden lampstands. And these lampstands would be lit up to envelop, apparently, the whole city. This celebration was very bright. I can quote the Mishnah twice, which is the Jewish oral tradition. It says, "And there was not a courtyard in Jerusalem which was not lit up from the light of these stars." Was not lit up from the light of the lamps. And it also says, "Anyone who has not seen the rejoicing of this ceremony has never seen rejoicing." So imagine you're there in the temple and you see this great celebration that's lighting up the whole city. Now, around this celebration, around this time and in this place is when Jesus and where Jesus says, "I am the light of the world." John chapter 7 gives us the time, and John chapter 8 gives us the location. So glory, Jesus was saying of himself. He was saying glory. You see the lights that are up in this city? I am the light of the world. Look to me in wonder, because I lead you from your wanderings in your deserts and will deliver you from your oppressors. It would have been jarring to see Jesus standing in front of these lamps and claiming that these symbols of light were really referring to himself. So there was a reaction that happened after he said that, and the reaction was of the Pharisees. And the reaction was, offense, it was arguments, and it was rejection. The Romans at the time were governing the Jews and collecting taxes from them. The Jews still hoped for a deliverer. And this apparent nobody was claiming that he was their salvation. Sometimes I gotta admit, when I read passages like this, my reaction can be similar and argumentative as well. How dare you say something like that to me? I prayed for weeks, and the diagnosis I had did not change. I prayed for weeks, and my heart still feels broken. When times are bad, it's very hard to hear claims about light and salvation. It can be difficult to hope. And on the inside, there's another kind of darkness, secrets that cannot be told, insecurities and worries and sins that if they were brought into the light, you think maybe they will just destroy me. So neither the outer darkness from this perspective nor the inner darkness can be brought into the light, can be brought before the God of this world. That's my first response to Jesus. That is often my response to Jesus. This kind of response comes from a place of feeling invalidated, like my sufferings are not taken seriously enough. They come from a place of feeling insecure, like if the world really saw the real me, would they reject it? So how can Jesus, a rabbi from 2,000 years ago, have anything to do with our very real problems of today? What does he have to do with us? So St. Augustine, a very famous theologian of the 4th and 5th century, tries to answer the question. He says, the light shows both other things and the thing itself. So if you turn on a lamp in complete darkness, you are able to see the lamp, but you are also able to see everything that the lamp illuminates. In the same way, the light of God tells us about God. But when the light of God shines on creation, when it shines on us, we discover new things. We discover new things about the world. We discover new things about ourselves. And my hope is that while investigating this verse, we will discover a light that is truly powerful enough to overcome our darknesses. We will discover a way to live that grants no power to suffering, that grants no power to death, and that shows us how to be a light of the world together. When I look up at the stars during those camping trips, it gives me a sense of peace when I would normally feel a sense of cynicism. Maybe today we can react in a way that is less argumentative and less knee-jerk, and we can also take away our cynicism for a second and reflect together. So let's get into it. When Jesus says, I am the light of the world, he is saying a lot. So we're going to break this verse down piece by piece. So I am. When Jesus uses the term I am, he is invoking something called the tetragrammaton. This is the name for God. If you didn't hear it, tetragrammaton. It is made from the four letters in Hebrew where we get the word Yahweh. Now, this refers back to a scene in Exodus 3:14. So Moses is there standing in front of the burning bush in which God is dwelling. And God says, I am that I am. And what does this mean? So cars, for example, need a factory. People need parents in order to exist. And God was saying that I need none of the above to exist. I am the creator, not the creation. I am that I am. Now, this isn't just a coincidence, by the way. Jesus using the term I am. He says this seven times, which often will sort of point you to something you should look at in the Bible, that number seven. So and it is also part of the literary structure of the book of John, Jesus saying, I am all these times. He says, I am the bread. I am the door. I am the light of the world. I am the good shepherd. I am the resurrection and the life. I am the way, the truth, and the life. And I am the true vine. All evoking these powerful metaphors about who Jesus is. So that is the I am, is the tetragrammaton. It's part of the literary structure of John, and it's one of these very powerful metaphors about who Jesus is. Next, we are at the light. I am the light. Now, you may think of a whole bunch of different ways that you like to interpret the word light. The Bible does have some ways in which it grounds the term. So let's talk about four ways. Number one, Jesus saying he is light echoes back to creation, meaning an ordering out of chaos. Maybe there's a part of your inner chaos that ought to be brought into the light to be ordered by God. It could be that addiction. It could be that insecurity. Number two, Jesus saying he is the light reminds us of Psalm 119:105. You might have memorized this as Sunday school. Thy word is a lamp unto my feet and a light unto my path. In this way, light represents wisdom. Because when we walk through something difficult, God's wisdom is something that guides us through the darkness because we have a light that illuminates the path for us. The next steps we have to take in our life. So though we may feel fear, we can walk towards our enemy. We can walk towards our darkness with a slow and deliberate step. Number three, meaning of light. Jesus saying he is the light serves to remind people of God's eternal presence and relationship with the Jewish people. In the temple, there was a light guarding the ark, which held the scrolls of the Torah. This was to represent God's eternal presence among his people and the promise that darkness would never overcome the world, but there would always be a light there. So when we are people who dispense and study God's word, we are similarly dispensing this light that darkness cannot overcome. Number four, Jesus saying he is the light of the world means he is endowing himself with great significance. Jewish literature used the title light of the world to apply to Israel, the patriarchs, the Messiah, God, even famous rabbis, and the law, but it often refers to something of great significance. Now, I don't want to lose you here. I have rehearsed this sermon with three people before I did it, and two of the people gave me a raised eyebrow when I said other people have used the term light of the world before. That is okay. This is because this is not the term the I am is a claim about Jesus' divinity. Light of the world is not. But it does mean the four things that we have talked about and what we will talk about next. So please do not panic. It is okay. So let's go to the next part. Light of the world, we're going to talk about of the world. Jesus saying that he is light of the world means that he is endowing himself with a universal significance. Jesus was not only the light of Israel. He was not only the light of the Mediterranean. He was not only the light of Asia. Jesus was the light of the world. So this is universal in significance and in scope. The Greek word that was used here for world is cosmos. We know the word cosmos for universe. So it's universal in scope. So that's what the phrase, I'll put it all together. I am the light of the world refers to. And the response, guess what it was? It was angry. When Jesus was alive, you did not simply say stuff like this about yourself. You didn't make glorious claims about yourself. Looking at the literature back in the day, there were passages that said, Rabbi so-and-so taught in the name of Rabbi so-and-so, but it never said, this rabbi taught in the name of himself. Second, if you look at the laws in Deuteronomy, especially referring to things like murder, you needed witnesses to say something about a person. And Jesus was saying something about himself without a witness. So that's exactly what the Pharisees tried to argue. So in John 8:12, Jesus says, I'm the light of the world. In 8:13, the Pharisees respond and say, here you are, appearing as your own witness. Your testimony is not valid. Then Jesus replies, even if I testify on my own behalf, my testimony is valid, for I know where I come from and where I am going. But if you have no idea where I come from or where I'm going, you judge by human standards. I pass judgment on no one. For if I do judge, my decisions are true, because I am not alone. I stand with the Father who sent me. In your own law, it is written that the testimony of two witnesses is true. I am one who testifies for myself. My other witness is the Father who sent me. Meaning that God himself, the person who wrote the law in the first place, served as the other witness. So Jesus is saying, please don't lecture me about the law in Deuteronomy. I know the guy who wrote it. So Jesus is making a powerful claim for himself. And this claim justifies this powerful promise, which is the next part of the verse today. Continuing on in the passage, Jesus says, whoever follows me will never walk in darkness. Walking in darkness, for me, often has more to do with my own attitude than what's actually going on in life. Things could sometimes feel so dark, even if I was doing okay at work, even if I had a supportive family, even if I had friends that were wanting to talk to me. All I could really do in those kind of situations was sit in my own darkness and come up with the worst things that I could think about myself and the worst of the good situation that was all around me. My orientation was determined to walk towards my inner darkness instead of trusting that the light of life had any power to change my situation. I believed things that were self-sabotaging. I diminished the very characteristics that I liked about myself. And the hope that there was any light in me was almost too painful to think of, because what if it wasn't there? Then I read verses like Matthew 5:14, where Jesus says, you are the light of the world, us. Jesus was saying that about us. When I look at myself and all I could see was darkness, Jesus said that I don't need to worry, that I shouldn't evaluate myself based on my own actions, but that the light in me was the light I could rely on because that light was Jesus dwelling in me. And that darkness and my darkness is not powerful enough to overcome the presence of God. If Jesus is with you, there is a light that you cannot snuff out. So see yourself as you are. And that inner darkness that you may feel, those secrets that you feel cannot be exposed, to expose them to the light of God, to confess sin even, is to bring awareness and understanding to your own innermost thoughts It is to bring a sense of honesty in your life. I'm sure we all know the voice. The truth will set you free. And if you happen to be sitting in that dark place, know that you are not alone there. Jesus himself sat in grief in the Garden of Gethsemane. David wrote Psalms of mourning. The book of Lamentations is attributed to Jeremiah. For you, in your grief, share something in common with the greatest people who ever lived, and you share a seat with the greatest people who ever lived. And your grief can be used to become wisdom. So that is the inner darkness. Now let's talk about the outer darkness. Do you remember that Feast of Tabernacles? What I called Sukkot? It may be Sukkot. It depends on your pronunciation of the Hebrew. Part of that feast was to remember the light as the pillar of fire that led the Israelites through the wilderness. It means to follow the light means more than just comprehending wisdom, but following, acting in a way that reflects God's glory. This means that it's more than talking the talk, comprehending what can be comprehended, but it means walking the walk as well. The promise, whoever follows me will never walk in darkness, also carries this implicit command to actively live out Jesus' command to love God and neighbor as yourself. Now, if we carry this metaphor a little bit further, notice that there is still capacity for darkness when we are following the light. We see the illuminated path ahead of us and the light ahead of us, but we are still in the midst of the night. Because when we are following God, it does not mean the light is not there. There are things that are very difficult to go through, and I do not wish to minimize those experiences through simply quoting scripture. We are not here to deny the existence of darkness. You may think that after a tragedy happens in life, that you are walking in darkness. And if you are walking in darkness, you are not following Jesus, because it says, whoever follows Jesus will never walk in darkness. This is not what we mean. Everyone in the Bible went through hard things. When Jesus was walking with the cross, he was going through a very hard thing, but he was following God. As a Christian, we are also invited into suffering. But there is a light that we can follow as we walk through the suffering with slow and deliberate steps. No matter how much I've prayed, I, for example, still have type 1 diabetes. Family members have still died. But to follow Jesus means to enter these hardships with courage. Have I not commanded you to be strong and courageous, God says in the book of Joshua, for the Lord of God will be with you wherever you go. It also says in Psalm 23, even if you walk through the valley of the shadow of death, you will fear no evil. If you follow Jesus, you will not walk in darkness because he is the light. Now, I want to take a quick pause here and talk about the emotional state of fear, the heightened state we may feel when we're going through something hard. And you may think when God commands us not to fear, you may think, oh, every time I feel this sense of fear, then I'm sinning. And that's bad and I need to stop. So you walk over here and you're like, dang it, I'm feeling afraid again. I feel terrible. I want us to gently try and put aside this entire framework. The command is to walk over here towards the light, not to dwell in your darkness and feel mad at yourself for feeling a certain emotional state of affairs. This emotional state of affairs is a normal part of your physiology. What courage is being able to walk this way while you feel those feelings. Now, This is the last part. What does it mean to actually have the light? The last part of the phrase says, those who follow Jesus will have the light of life. To understand this passage, we need to go to the next chapter. So we were in chapter 8, now we're going to chapter 9. In the next chapter, Jesus encounters a man born blind. His disciples inquired if his blindness was due to the sin of the man or due to his parents. And Jesus replies, neither this man nor his parents sinned, said Jesus, but this happened so that the works of God might be displayed in him. As long as it is day, we must do the works of him who sent me. Night is coming where no one can walk, but while I am in the world, I am the light of the world. How blind of us to blame our misfortunes for some things that are well beyond our control. We get stuck in self-blame and are blind to the ways our misfortunes can ultimately be used for good. And we know in all things, God works for the good of those who love him, who have been called according to his purpose. Romans 8:28. In the places that you blame yourself, there may be opportunities for good. Psalm 18:28 says, you, Lord, keep my lamp burning. My God turns my darkness into light. When Jesus heals the blind man, he is making him receptive to light. And when he was blind, he couldn't see that light. Jesus is awakening the man to see Jesus, the light. So to have the light of life, you need to receive it. And you need to be made alive by God. And when Jesus is performing this miracle, he is using mud. In Genesis, this is the substance from which man was created. So this means that Jesus, in healing the blind man, was recreating this man into a new person, a person who can walk towards the light. So let's conclude the sermon for today. Back when I camped as a child, it drove me crazy, but my dad would make us turn off the flashlights as we were walking towards the dock, and I wasn't able to see. But eventually, our eyes adjusted, and we were able to see the light of the stars as we were walking down. We were essentially blind until we were attuned to the light, until our eyes changed to see the light. I invite you to ask God to help you on your journey towards him. Look towards him with curiosity and confidence. Leave the darkness of your tents. Pray that God may recreate your eyes, and of course respond, so your next steps can be you bravely emerging from your darkness. Flee from those things that have kept you down and follow the light. This may mean following Jesus for the first time, bringing a secret from the recesses of your soul towards him or a trusted friend, or reminding yourself to walk with an unwavering confidence and determination towards the best person, the best light, Jesus Christ, and a light-filled future. Amen.